to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys.
Over here to my right, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hello! Sorry, I've been sitting in Bobby's seat, so I just thought I had to pay homage to Bobby.
And next to him, we've got Diego Stucco.
Hey, Mike.
And next to Diego, we've got Brandon Birdson.
What's happening, Mike?
And over here to my left, we've got the Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, Rob. I've never missed a show. Arb is here.
That is true. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Rob.
Wow. That banter was fascinating.
I know, that was one of our better openings.
Yeah, it was great.
Anywho. See, what he does, he just stays here the whole time. So when the podcast happens, he doesn't miss one.
Exactly.
All right, well, today we are honored to have two guests with us. Joining us for the podcast, we have recording artist, bass player, Abby Travis.
How's it going, Mike?
Welcome, Abby.
Thank you.
We also have Tommy Grennis joining us.
Greetings, Earthlets.
Did I say that right, Tommy?
Yes, you did.
I have a hard time with last names on this, so that's nothing new if I butchered it. And Tommy, he's played in a bunch of bands. He's in an awesome YouTube video with one of his bands that we'll put up a link to. And he's also a wiring guru. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and wiring for your studio. So, plus I want to get some free advice. You didn't know that, but.
You're welcome.
But before we get going, just a few things that I want to bring up that I wanted to talk to you guys about. I don't know if any of you read very many music blogs. Scott, do you read any blogs? Do you read any music? That's a firm no.
What's a blog?
What about you?
I do not.
No?
Sorry to say no.
So, but you obviously have read one.
Yeah. How about you, Diego?
I do.
Yeah.
I read several. Yeah.
Have you read, do you read Create Digital Music?
Yeah. It's Peter Kern.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great blog.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
I love it.
He has a post. What about you, Brandon?
I keep up on some blogs, yeah.
What's one of your favorite blogs?
I could, there's a, what's it called? That big blog list aggregator. What's that called? That big music blog list aggregator.
Synthopia?
The Hype List?
No.
Yeah. Synthopia is cool, and there's a couple other sound design ones. Designing Sound. I don't know the names. I have them all saved in bookmarks.
We'll just put you in the yes.
Yes category.
What about you, Tommy, Abby? You guys read very many music blogs, anything like that?
No.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
You're with Robin.
It's too depressing.
The only reason why I mention this is because out there, there's some really amazing blogs and some really smart writers out there. And one of them is actually who Diego was talking about was Peter Kern. And he has a blog called Create Digital Music. And there was a great article, and we won't go into the whole thing, but I just wanted to run some of the points by you guys. On the name of the article was The Myth of Falling Fidelity and Audio History Underburdened by Fact. Basically, what he says is that a lot of times the music industry, a lot of people are saying how audio is getting worse and worse and worse, and that's causing basically the demise of music in the audio industry. And he actually puts a really smart argument for the fact that, no, audio is actually getting better, and a lot of these things that the labels and the record company blame technology on as far as the lessening of the fidelity really has nothing to do with the audio quality itself. And I found that pretty interesting. And I wanted to run it by all you guys really quick and get your opinion. Scott, audio, getting better, getting worse? Has technology helped music or hurt music?
I think that the technology to create music has gotten better. The ability to have a string orchestra at your fingertips at a moment's notice is something you didn't have 20 years ago.
Right.
So I think the ability to create has been better. I think the fidelity, it depends. I mean, there could be a case to be made that the way people engineered albums early on, they compressed the hell out of it. They didn't give any dynamics to it. So did that hurt, quote unquote, audio? I don't know. I mean, I think the ability to bring music to the masses easier has helped. The technology has helped in that realm. Fidelity, sometimes, I mean, it just depends on how you master it and how you engineer it. I hear drums and low end that's splatty, high end that's sharp and digital. Yeah, I mean, that's not as good, but does it stop the listeners? I mean, we all listen to stuff on cassettes, and that's terrible.
Right.
So it depends on what you're comparing to, you know, the A-track, the cassette. But everyone did it. Now we have MP3 / whatever the codec of the day is.
Right. Rob, what about you? Do you think technology helped?
I think I have to agree. Technology has made it easier to create music. The way music is crushed now in MP3s sounds like crap and no one cares, so that's fine. There's more good music being made than ever, more bad music being made than ever, because it's just more music being made than ever. Yeah. And the public really doesn't care as long as they can kind of hear what's going on. I mean, we used to, when we were little, listen to, you know, cassettes made off the radio, and it was fine.
That's the
no
point
one
that
cares.
Peter
it's
makes.
Good enough.
Yeah.
It starts off from the radio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's no question that if you actually do a real comparison about how today's standard mastered music sounds compared to, you know, in the 70s or 80s, it doesn't sound as good now.
But you know what? But on the flip side, I remember forgetting about the high-end audiophile. You grabbed a record, which was always slightly warped. You put the needle on it, and you shh, 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 shh. Music would come on. It would be crackly because no one ever took super care of their albums. And I'm talking about for the mass general public. You know, you could have too much low-end because it would just go through the vinyl. So you did have a lot of low-end. So that was your record. You couldn't take it with you, so you had a cassette. I mean, when the Walkman came out, it was like revolutionary that you're going to have something so good, so small.
But the convenience is more important than the sound quality.
Sure.
And always has been. Everybody acts like that's a new phenomenon with the iPod, but it's not.
So you have to look at low-end cassette against MP3 and what sounds better.
Tell me, what do you
think? Low-end cassette, by the way, sounds better.
What do you think? Well, technology, does it help music, hurt music?
I don't think it's really made any difference because 90% of the public are still going to listen to crap anyway, as far as I'm concerned. And all I've noticed is it's kind of made it where before you used to take a little bit of effort because of tweakability. Now people are more prone to pull pre-used loops or pre-recorded things and actually trying to create themselves. So I think people that are still going to be creative are going to be the next people that are going to be the true creators of new sound. I personally still use all my old crap because I love it, and it's still, to me, technology is moving faster and faster and faster, but the old technology still hasn't been used to its potential.
No, that's true too.
So I'm still fine. I mean, I still find it a lot easier to pull out like an old synthesizer or something to get like an incredible sound than going through pre-recorded loops and then going through filters, and then you're more or less taking something that's being done and then just oversaturating it that way instead of trying to get it from the core. But
right.
In general, I think it's just made that. I don't think it's ever been really any different. I think there's always been one technology that people, like when synthesizers came out, people said they were fake instruments, but you still, you had to be very clever to be able to get the sounds that they were calling fake sounds out. Well, you know what I'm saying. Bobble, bobble.
Right. What about you, Abby? What do you think? Technology help music, hurt music?
Well, I agree with what you guys are saying about how the listener, you know, the MP3s, and even in those tiny little earbuds that people use, sometimes I often think, like, why even bother paying good money to master something if half the people are going to listen to it on these tiny, horrid little earbuds? but I also think that, you know, the points that were made about how much easier it is for people to record themselves on a low budget. Like, I work on a pretty low budget, and I can get pretty good sounds. But, however, I do think that what Tommy's saying is really valid because I hear a very generic quality to recorded music. It's like you can tell that everyone's got these plugins with their Pro Tools. I think earlier on, people spent money because there was money to be spent, first of all. But there was a difference between like Studio A at Ocean Way and Studio A at A&M, you know, and there's certain echo chambers and these wonderful things that, you know, most people would never have access to anyways. But I feel like that part of the art, which was awesome, is kind of non-existence, not as it's not really in existence anymore. And I do get really burnt on hearing a lot of stuff that just sonically sounds so similar. And then now it's gotten to the point where even the lo-fi movement, it's like not even real lo-fi. Like they're, instead of using like horrible like little Fostex cassette tapes, they're actually just putting like a virtual lo-fi filter on them.
Yeah, what's wrong? That's just not right.
You know what I mean? Like it's a vacuum or something.
Brandon, what do you think? Technology hurt, helped?
I think what it's given us too many options. You know, when you're limited and you only have a 16-track recorder to record something, you know, you're going to be forced to get more creative
right.
in what you're doing. Now we have access to any number of plugins and virtual instruments, and you can tweak every parameter up to the last minute, which sometimes you'll just end up sitting there for months adjusting things rather than just making a decision before it hits, you know, before it hits the box. You know, making a decision outside before it hits the tape recorder or the, you know, the Pro Tools or whatnot. And, go ahead.
No, I was going to agree with you what you say. And Diego, what?
Well, there's a couple of things, and one it's connected to what you just said, Abby. Basically, the idea that you create a piece of music with a low budget and everything, but. And connected to the fact that people listen to the earbuds, that kind of thing. Well, I was listening to your music on your website, and the first time I heard the music was through the speakers of the computer, which sounded very good. Then I also listened to the same track through the Apogee One that I have connected to the laptop, so I have a high-quality sound, and it still sounded good. So to me, this is something for people that create music. They have to consider these different ways that people have to listen to music these days. So if something sounds like crap, it's going to sound like crap everywhere. Yeah. If it sounds great, it sounds great everywhere. But regarding the formats, you know, regarding this thing of the MP3, there's also other formats out there that people like to buy. For example, you can buy Apple Lossless, that kind of thing.
All right.
Somehow, you know, it's not bad. To give you another idea, today I just gave myself a gift because I bought the Peter Gabriel Special Edition thing, which has 96 killers, 24-bit tracks of the entire album. So I already bought the regular CD, but when I saw this morning, I said, I need it. I want it! Because to me, it still matters. And I'm just looking forward to the moment when I will receive it to make an A-B comparison, because I know there's going to be a difference. So,
but you know what I was going to say, though, is it seems like music now has a middle class. Before, you had people that had no money. They put a couple mics up. They kind of did their demos. It was what it was. And then you had the big artists that went to the studios that designed the sounds, you know, whether it's the Led Zeppelin drums, and they spend 3 days trying to get it and go through all the different Marshall stacks, just getting the right guitar sound. And there was all these investments that were made to create that sound in the studio, which is almost a form of musical design. Well, now there's a middle class that's been able to have access to really decent sounding material quickly with no effort. What happens, though, is you have to differentiate between the middle class and the upper class, because the upper class just get lazy, meaning the upper class are the people that sell very commercially successful. At that point, you still need to do what you did 20, 30 years ago. You need to come up with something new and interesting. You don't need to just go buy Contact Complete and then you start going at it, or Omnisphere, but you need to sit there and go, I'm going to create with
don't
something.
Don't say anything about it. Okay?
But you've got to come up with something that defines your sound, because that's why you're filling concerts and you're selling the albums in a big way.
Right.
And you've got a budget. You've got the money to invest to be able to be the next, whether it's the Pink Floyd or the Zeppelin or something that really defined the sound of or in many areas of Beatles. I mean, you can just go on and on with the different bands that have defined
right.
musical sonic sounds. But now we have a middle class, and it's all over YouTube.
Yeah.
And people can sit there and say, hey, here's my demo, here's my stuff, I'm a young band,
yeah.
we have no budget, but it sounds pretty good.
It sounds sonically pretty good. I mean, there's more horrible stuff to weed through now than there ever was, because anybody can make a record at this point. But, you know, that's okay. If the playing field is leveled so that anybody can create music, the people with real talent are still going to bubble to the top.
Sure.
Really?
Eventually. not quickly, but eventually.
Well,
eventually.
You know, the reason why I asked everybody, because ultimately, you know, we blame and what Peter was basically, in a broad sense, and you really have to read this, and we'll post a link on our podcast blurb. But you know, a lot of people blame technology for the music, but ultimately it's not about the technology. As a matter of fact, technology is getting better. It's getting easier. It's sonically, you know, we're
doing
true. Things.
Think about recording acoustically with microphones. Yeah. Okay, microphones are cheap. How many people actually try to mic a guitar amp or something else? I mean,
yeah.
You stay inside. Yeah, yeah, I know. But I'm talking the majority of people that create music with electronic instruments, yeah. They just stay in the box.
Yeah.
They stay in the computer. You just need to get out.
And I think
access.
And I think that's the thing to remember. It's all about the people, and it's all about, you know, the homogenization of a lot of the record labels do with their acts. They want to play it safe. And now, you know, you can't play it safe because you got all these independent artists. You got all these, you know, really good.
Well, the record companies are not the driving force.
Well, not anymore.
But, it's interesting. When you talk this way, I'm going to take the analogy to film. Okay?
Okay, go. Take it.
Because that's my world. Okay. Oscar films. Nobody saw it. Hurt Locker, the lowest winning Oscar-made movie that nobody saw.
I saw it.
You know, but a lot of people didn't. Those are the films that the film industry go, that's the best that we can do, hopefully, of that era. But what do people want to do? White Women, Dumb and Dumber, and all those films that are really commercially successful, those are the ones they want to see. So sometimes what's popular is not always what's best.
That's true.
Of an industry.
That's true.
Because some people go, yeah, the writing's crap. You get some actors in there, fine. Nobody cares. What about a good story? What about amazing acting? What about – and some of them are brutal. Some of them are very difficult movies to watch or uncomfortable. Same thing with music. Some music's very sugary and poppy,
right.
And it's great. You listen to it, you have a good time, you nod your head. But then there's some music that's a little more complicated, that takes a little more thought to it, but it's less commercial. So I think the record companies, it's a business. It's the same thing as Walmart. They want to go out, they want to make some money, they invest some money in an artist, they're going to want to get a return on their dollar, and you go, was it fair? That's what the people want to buy. It's the sugary stuff. People
right.
like the candy, not the high-end, you know.
Right.
But I wonder if, you know, when we were kids, you'd get a record and sit down at home with your friends and look at the cover and listen to the record the way that you would read a book or watch a movie.
Sure.
I wonder if kids or if the average, not even just children, if the average you know, person that buys an MP3 file or a CD does that. I think that people listen to music differently. I think it's a background. It's not – music is background music to them, and I'm generalizing, of course.
But in those days when we did that,
now,
there were studio executives that said, here's what we're going to make you listen to. You're not going to have access to this. You're not going to have access to that, but you will have access to what we want you to listen to. And that's what you listen to because you had no choices.
But
same,
it was a whole experience.
I agree.
Not when we grew up, though, because we grew up in punk rock. So it was totally – I listened to all kinds of stuff that wasn't like that at all.
But quote, unquote, the underground.
The reason I created music and I started listening to music was because I grew tired of being forced ELO in Boston and
Sticks
Records. You know what? Strangely enough, I don't mind that stuff now. Like, I think – but, like, it was a reaction and it was like, I will make a record with a cassette recorder in my garage and press a single and I don't care. And, you know, music influences me were very, very different because I wasn't
right.
influenced by any – I was influenced by the German psychedelic bands and like old records my dad had in the garage, like The Shadows and old surf albums and stuff, you know. And I was like, God, they did it. That why isn't there music like that anymore? That's all
right.
I loved lo-fi when it was good for
but
me.
See,
I
think it's about a musical genre or
anything
specific. The experience of music listening is changed.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
The way you see, you know, we bought a record, we listened to it, and then you could share it or not. You could be alone in your room. It doesn't really matter if you had friends around.
Right.
It was you had a feeling that you were buying an experience.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to enjoy my record. Right now, it's an event that it's happening in your life, maybe layered with other events.
Right.
And so the experience changed.
But I wonder if it's because at the time you had less choices. I mean, like TV, ABC, CBS, NBC, pick one, that's all you're going to watch. Now you got 500 stations. You got as much music as you'd ever want to listen to in any genre. Movies you can do on Netflix. I think what happens is, you know, you used to get dressed to go to the movies. Now you just go in shorts and you on your cell phone most of the time texting. Right. Yeah. It's nothing special. I think the access to entertainment is no big deal.
You know what's amazing about the whole music experience, first of all, is how it's changed so radically and it's done so slowly, and we've all kind of like accepted this whole change. And I'll give you an example. My daughter's 16 years old and I don't think she's ever bought a CD. I don't think she's been in a record store probably in about 5 or 6 years, and yet
she can't find one if she lives in Los Angeles.
but that's amazing, because when I was her age, you know, I bought all kinds of CDs and cassettes actually, and was in, you know, I was in all the record stores and the little independents and also the big ones and the Sam Goodies, and it blows me away to think that there's this whole generation that doesn't even know, like, she's never even, you know, owned vinyl. I mean, she doesn't even know.
Yeah, but you see, DJs, they still do expeditions in the record store to find something.
No, no, absolutely.
But on the flip side, when those artists, when you were a kid, if you didn't have a record deal, you were screwed. You were done. There's no career. It was either with a record label or not.
Right.
Now, you can be an independent artist and actually have a following.
Right. Oh, yeah. If you want to be on the road all year.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But the point was is that even though she's never been to this whole traditional, you know, way we experience music, she got into Broadway, and she got into Broadway music, and she's a really good singer, and she's been in the musicals. And I went to one of her performances, and she just was amazing. And all I could think of was when I was listening to her sing, because she had a lead in the musical, was that voice came from the fact that she would be at home at night, she'd go on YouTube, and she'd watch all these musicals that were there. And she would see she had this whole vast information that was, you know, she listened to everything from, you know, what was on Broadway, from Wicked. You know, she wore out my little iPod because she was listening to Wicked over and over and over.
Luckily, now you have an iPad, so
she's not touching that. But that, to me, that was kind of exciting, that even though things have changed, now she has this whole other bit of, you know, information gathering process, this whole internet thing that we didn't have. I mean, there was no way when I was a kid that I would actually spend my hard-earned money on something just to see if I liked it or not, you know?
That's true.
You would have to, like, go with kind of the sure thing. So if anything, nowadays, you have more of the opportunities to kind of try before you buy, you know? And you can get and be exposed to a bunch of different
music. But I remember I used to try CDs before buying them. Now they're shrink-wrapped for You can't even get close to the shelf in these days because they steal everything.
But even, like, experimental music, like the stuff you do, Diego, with your, you know, Music from the Tree and everything like that. I mean, that's stuff that can find an audience that years ago.
I'm surprised that some people actually buy it for listening to their MP3 players. I mean, because I really don't do it for that. But sometimes, you know, it happens.
I think as things are changing, it's just going to evolve into something. And I think, you know, technology, I mean, we're in for a wild ride. I mean, I don't know where this is going to end. We're going somewhere.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, technology has kind of peaked in certain ways. I mean, I think the process of recording and recording software, you know, that's we're getting towards the peak on a lot of this stuff until something else comes along.
The main thing that's changed as far as the public goes is everybody's been here discussing what it was like to find the music they loved as a kid, and everybody had a different experience. And really what's changed, the technology is not really the big deal. The big deal is what's changed is the way people find what they like.
Yeah, you're right.
And everybody, we can all relate to whatever experience we had as kids finding music, and today's kids will have experiences too. I mean, they're all finding stuff they love for whatever reason they love it. It may not be stuff we can relate to. It doesn't matter.
But every generation has their music, though.
Yeah, and every generation has their way of finding their music. And this generation probably has more to sift through than any previous one because they're not being driven by big labels as much unless you happen to love Beyonce and Lady Gaga and nothing else.
Yeah.
But everybody's going to have stories about how they found their favorite stuff. And, you know, 30 years from now, people are going to be sitting
true.
Around talking
if
about
if you look at the major websites like what's the FM thing?
Last FM.
Yeah. Last FM.
Or
you
Pandora.
See, huge playlists of
sure.
people. Right. And there's so many names. You don't know all these names, but people do.
Right.
So it's just a huge variety of things out there.
I just wanted to go... Can I do it again?
In which format?
No-fi? No. It's funny because this is what I wanted when I was young. This is what I was striving for.
This moment right now?
Yes. Being with Mike Rodriguez.
Wow. You were here.
No.
You made it.
Was like, no record labels, everyone does their own music, complete freedom for artists. And it's actually here, and I have no complaints about it whatsoever. It's like I went on Last FM and I've recorded now something like, it's like 35 records since I was 16 that are all on Last FM. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Everything and even demo mixes, where the hell did they get that from? Things I'm actually going Last FM and downloading stuff I don't even have. It's insane. I go like, I never remember recording this, but it's me. And I'm going like, I can't believe I have it. And I'm just going like, and kids are listening to this and I'm reading comments from kids. And I'm going, this is so fantastic.
Oh yeah.
And I would have never believed. I thought we'd be flying around in little Jetsons cars when I was young, but I didn't think.
There's a lot
that
of
would
vitality
be going on,
happening, actually.
Yeah.
It's really...
I think it does give the artist complete access and direct access to an audience. But the problem, which Rob was saying also, is that you have so many choices now. Yeah. I mean, you go to the internet, we were talking about how do you get seen. And now I think the need of the artist is not necessarily with a record label, but it's with a good PR marketing guy, girl, whatever, person. And... I think they need to figure out how do they stand out from the noise. I mean, how does an artist say, hi, I'm unique, I'm different, give me an opportunity,
well, you don't
listen
say
to my
that
material.
First. You just do it. If someone says that, it's not a good sign. That's
but it is, because you just, how do you get to your audience? How does your audience get to you? And that's really the new question. It's not about distribution,
well, I can tell
how
you,
to get to Walmart.
For example, there's this guy, Jack Conte, okay? He does the video songs. And people knows him. People know him because he's very good. He's talented. He makes great stuff. And his songs are great. The covers that he does are great. And somehow people got to know him. And now they find him. He has 15,000 followers on YouTube. And I'm sure he has thousands and thousands on
other channels. Wow, 15,000.
No, I mean. I think he makes a living out of MP3s. I read that he makes a living out of selling MP3s. So probably he was able to build such a huge.
Does he post something new very, very frequently?
He does.
I think that's. Seems to be a huge part of it.
And
is
whatever
it
does,
it's
quantity.
It's all about content, absolutely.
All
about content.
Well, because the public relates to quantity as being having a relationship with the artist.
Right.
In other words, if you feel like that artist is constantly creating, you
feel
like
alive,
you have an interaction.
So
they're
that's
alive,
why
yeah.
you want to follow. It's not just
it's like an episodic career.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like a record that has been released by a record label and you don't know the artist. With Jack, you know him. You can see whatever he's doing, whatever he's thinking. It keeps you updated about there was a day that he lost the SD card with the stuff he just recorded. Well, I'm sure. I mean, I thought, man, what kind of material did he lose? I mean, you get to feel what he's going through. So that's how you relate with him.
But even
I'll have to check it out. Is it sort of a diary thing and then he shows
No.
What's the deal? I mean,
well,
I guess I'll just
he makes video songs, basically. It's not a video clip. Whatever he plays, it's in the track. So he plays every instrument of his tracks. And then you see him singing also with his girlfriend and everything. And so he made his own format. And it's a great format.
And you also look at commercial artists. How do you make it, quote unquote, big? And you look at someone like Lady Gaga. I mean, the music's okay. I mean, it's
all fashion.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
There's a visual artistry to her that made people go, whoa,
yeah.
Stop, go back.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
But what it is showing is You know, it's interesting from the days of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, where you had to sing, you had to dance, you had to look good, you had to perform. And it's kind of going back there, where now, you know, Beyonce, Lady Gaga, it's more about than just picking up an instrument and singing. You got to have the full package.
It's true.
Visual, audio.
I do.
The problem for me, for people who really, I mean, I can appreciate
the Janis Joplin won't work right now.
I can appreciate packaging an artist like that, and I understand why it's so successful and everything. But for people who really care more about the music of it, I mean, yeah, these new artists you're talking about, they're fine. But if you compare, like, compare Lady Gaga with, like, what Janet Jackson was doing in her heyday or Madonna was doing in her heyday, you know, because you talk about them, they were referred to as the visual artists of those days. You know, look at Rhythm Nation videos and things like that. And just look at the level of musicianship and stuff. I mean, back then you actually had incredible players playing on this stuff. I mean, they were often playing poppy, forgettable stuff, but they were still playing it with a flair.
The Mega Ableton.
Well, exactly. Ooh. I don't think
the fashions were as good, though, as what Lady. I mean, she really has some amazing,
some really interesting art,
like
visuals.
Art piece. It's like installations. Lady Gaga. I think that her costuming is.
I mean, how many times have you seen art cover the face with vinyl?
But it's distracting.
I'm saying all that stuff, she does great and everything, but if you're just thinking in terms of the music,
sure.
If you actually listen to her and don't ever look at her.
I don't think that's what people are doing. I think they're buying an image and a celebrity. They're not.
But you know what? No. They are, and that's the mainstream, but there's a huge undercurrent of people who still, like you, Tommy, as a kid, would have rejected for all the right reasons.
I'm sure we rejected Madonna and Janet Jackson.
But you know what? It's the kind of thing where I can say, well, you thought that was bad. Check out what's happening.
But you know what's interesting? If you look at historically, talking about punk is a good thing. There's a lot of each generation, somebody figures out how to make money with an artist. And they go in, and used to be called corporate rock, whatever the genre was. They have somebody, they market them to death. You get, you know, gag on it after a while because you can't hear it anymore. Yeah. Then somebody says, whether it's Zeppelin, whether it's Janis Joplin, whether it was Hendrix, whether it was any punk band of the early days, somebody comes out of the genre, says, a Nirvana. Compared to corporate rock. You look at so many bands that said, I'm going to be totally different. I'm not even that good of a player. Most of the punk bands aren't very good. Most of the bands said, well, we want to do a band. We have a good look. We got a vibe. And they're huge. And they're actually genre defining because they changed the path of where they were going. And then all of a sudden, you know, REM went from being really alternative to playing in the elevator. You know, it's like, it's boring. My parents listen to it. Concept.
Well, which means it's no longer cool.
It's absolutely.
Well, you know, we're gonna wrap this up the first part because we're gone way over.
Wow.
You can do it through an edit.
No, but you know what? But listening to this whole conversation, and I was choking a little bit. So thank you for putting some good conversation in there while I was going through my own personal little choke. No, but it just shows that, you know, we don't know where this thing is going, and it's changing, it's redefining all the time. It's kind of like this living mass of culture that's just kind of going all over the place, and we're all trying to get a hold of it. And you know what? I don't think we can. We're just going to kind of have to hang on. But I definitely know that you cannot blame technology for crappy music.
Of course you just can't.
You know, so anybody tries to say that, you know, that the iPod was the downfall of music or that MP3s was a downfall of music.
No, the iPod is the downfall of dinner conversation.
No, that was the DS.
All right, well, on that note, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to visit with Abby and Tommy, and we're going to find out a little bit of what's happening with them and what they're working on. And we're also going to talk about expensive microphones. All right, so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were defining music, technology, and what will happen.
And how are you controlling this podcast, Mike?
Oh, well, this podcast today is being controlled by
the iPad. Thanks for asking, Scott.
The iPad.
You slipped me a 20.
AC7 Pro virtual controller. And my iPad is actually controlling my Pro Tools. And I can start and stop just like this. And this. No, I'm just kidding.
That's you, my Apple. Yeah.
Hey, come on. Speaking of technology, the iPad, this thing's a phenomenal thing. I use it more and more every single day. And mark my words, all you guys will have them. You will all have
Did you say the same thing just 2 weeks ago?
I did.
You're great, great.
What is this iPad you speak of? I haven't heard anything about that.
It's the little things you buy, you know, you rip them off and you stick them all over the place.
All right.
Oh, nice.
But you know what? We won't go into that because I don't want to get any more angry letters. Okay. From the guys on the podcast. So before the break, I want to talk a little bit more to Abby and to Tommy. Abby, so just tell us a little bit about your bio and what you've been up to. Because, you know, you can go to abbytravis.com and find out about Abby and listen to your music. One thing, your music is when I played your album and...
Which album did you play? I just totally dated myself there. Which rec album? Which
the one where you know what? I don't even know the name, but I apologize. It's the one where you're in the black and white photo where you're leaning back.
Is a record album that I made about 15 years ago.
It was so unexpected because it was so lush and so big and just had really great vocals.
The one where I have like the little 20s hairdo and I'm drinking the milk. Yeah, I made that a really long – that's my first record that you listen to. I've put out two more since then and some singles. And I've just finished my fourth, but it's not released yet. The one that you heard was recorded on a 2-inch 16-track Stevens tape machine.
Stevens! There we go.
So, Abby,
My first two records, I used to have one of those.
Stevens?
It was like a wonderful sounding album for us.
Yeah. Stevens was great.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get started and
playing music?
Yeah, exactly.
When I was 16 years old, my brother, who's a couple years older than I, dated a girl in a band called the Love Dolls. And they needed a bass player. And she kind of liked the way I dressed, and I had given her a tuna fish sandwich at our house once. And at that point in time in that kind of music scene, that was enough. So that's how I started playing bass.
The old well-placed tuna sandwich.
Yes, you can't go wrong with that.
Mayo or not mayo?
Oh, mayo, for sure. Right. But not on the bread.
Depends which clothes you have on. It's a combination of two things.
So I did that for – I played in the Love Dolls for – I don't know, like 3-something years. And then I was in this little power pop band that kind of sounded like early Big Star called The Rails. And then I went to music school. I went to immediately after I graduated, the Dick Grove School of Music went bankrupt. So I felt really bad. My instructor was this – I was in the bass department, and the guy who was the head teacher, his name was Joel DiBartolo. He was this great guy. But in the same year he played on the Tonight Show band, that was when Johnny Carson retired. And
Joel?
And the music school went bankrupt in the same year. It was just like, harsh. tough year. So then after that, I started doing work as like a bass player for hire, and I played bass. That my first kind of like pro gig was playing for Vanessa Paradis, who now sort of has kids with Johnny Depp. But she was like the French Tiffany, sort of.
Her name was big in Europe.
Yeah, she was big in France. So that was interesting. And then I did some of my own stuff, and then I played with, I played with a bunch of bands over the years. I played in Beck's band for a little while, and a band called Elastica, they were really fun. They were this English all-girl band that I did some touring with. And I played in the Bangles for a few years, but not in the Bangles. I was their tour bass player. We wouldn't want to misstate that. And
so you were an associate Bangle.
Sort of, yeah.
A Banglet.
and so in between that, I've always done my own music. So I've always kind of had like two things going at the same time. I sort of fund my own stuff by working with other people. And it's fun. Sometimes it's fun to just play bass too and not have to be the creative figurehead for everything.
Sure. Right.
No, that can be enjoyable. And I'm very excited because this summer I'm going to go out and play bass for Rocky Erickson. Woo! I'm so excited. So I start doing that in late June. So I'm very excited.
Where's that going to be?
I think mostly Europe.
Wow.
Well, you should mention the 13th floor elevators.
That was his early band.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm kind of stoked. So that's me in a nutshell.
And was most of the recording you did for your own albums at home, or were you?
Yeah.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah. All of my records, albums, I did at my house, except for this last one that isn't out yet. I did record Basics at a studio in the Valley. Just because I got kind of sick of like engineering, producing, and playing at the
sure.
same time, so I just did drums and bass at Barry Paul's studio, which is I think he's got an old Soundcraft. I was trying to remember what kind of console he has because I knew I was coming in here. You know, but he has like a bunch of old. I mean,
his Soundcraft.
I think it was this old Soundcraft, yeah. right? And yeah. I mean, he was running Pro Tools, but he had more outboard gear, and I think his engineering, like I still am, sometimes my overheads can get a little phasey. I'd like to actually take some classes in drum miking. I think it would be a good thing to do.
Or, yeah. or you could talk to Bobby Summerfield, a podcast panel member who's not here.
Ah, yes.
Come back
maybe I'll trade him a tuna fish sandwich for a drum.
Well, that's great. And, the other album that I heard was the Glittermouth album.
That's the one that I put out. That was the first one that I made on Pro Tools. I made that on a Digio 1, I think.
Yeah. On an 01? Yeah. Really?
You're brave. I mean,
that's what I had. I had like a G4 and an 01, and then that whole thing died, and now I have Mac, you know, one of those big towers in Pro Tools 8. And I just got Logic, but I'm still trying to figure out how to use it. It's like I keep doing the old keyboard commands that I'm used to doing on Pro Tools, and then the whole thing just goes like that, you
Don't
know.
Don't tell me.
It's complete. I'm sitting in my studio screaming. I'm like, how do you put 8th notes and 16th notes on the grid in Logic?
It's a mystery. Nobody knows.
It's not logical.
See, if Bill was here, you'd have your answer.
Why are these mystery guests? Yeah. Yeah. Answer all these mystery.
I hear the screams of a hellion from the deepest pits of hell. It's unbelievable. I'm just yelling, baby pandas on YouTube. Baby pandas on YouTube.
I keep the frustration inside, but I feel the same about Lodge.
Well, I always say, I mean, we always have these battles. I always say it's the most ironically named piece of software ever because nothing in it is logical.
Well, also, there's so much stuff with the UI that I guess should be cool, but I'm really frustrated when I'm just trying to move my cursor and all of a sudden the whole like visual screen shrinks or expands. Yeah. I'm like, dude, yeah. where was the thing? I was like, why can't I double click on this? I'm not used to it though. I mean, I have to say,
Bill, we miss you because it's so much more fun to make fun of Logic when you're
here.
I don't feel the motivation.
The disclaimer is that I really have only been using it for like a couple of weeks, so I'm sure it's me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty frustrating.
The way you feel right now, that's called being a seasoned veteran. Well, that's great. So when you approach your albums, you do all the engineering, you do all the mixing, do you do
it depends.
Or is it a collaborative process?
It depends on which album.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Glittermouth since I heard that.
Glittermouth, there's some songs on that were these trip hop kind of songs,
right.
and I worked with my friend Lamont Hyde on that, so he had Pro Tools LE System 2, and we'd move back and forth. I think I did mix that whole record. That's the only one that I mixed, actually, all by myself, so to speak.
Well, working on a Digital 1, though, that was that's something. That was something.
Oh, yeah. No, because I had all those cracked plugins. So I actually had all these great things that I don't have anymore. Like those, there was something called DUI
Shape.
Those were awesome. Yeah, those were terrific. And I had all this cool
Recipes
stuff.
OS 9.
See, now you just got to go VST and you get all these.
Really? Because, I mean,
Wow.
I had all this cool stuff.
The Audio Doncast does not condone pirating of software.
Disclaimer.
Well, I mean, just keyboard had, you know. It's like,
I listened to some of your stuff, and I was just going through the player that you have on your website, I really liked it. I liked the style. I liked the lyrics and everything. I thought it was really fresh. You know, it was something very interesting to me. And
I have
an ear for sound, so I was just, you know, oh, I like that. I like this. I like that.
Yeah, I like to put a lot of little doilies in the, you know, but it has very arranged.
It has, you know, it's solid and interesting.
Thank you very much.
Very interesting.
Thank you. That's very kind.
So now you're working on a new album that's not released yet, right?
No, this one I didn't mix because I tried to. I started suffering from the "a little bit of knowledge will absolutely destroy." You know, I got to a point. I think Glittermouth I was able to mix because I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. It sounds pretty good to me, you know. Like, and then I got to a point where I started knowing more about what I was doing, and then completely doubting everything, and plus having no perspective, having, you know, produced this really hyper-arranged stuff. So I went and had the guy that Barry Kenneth Paul, who did the basics, he mixed it. And it was interesting. What was your name again?
Brandon,
I'm sorry.
No worries.
It was a similar experience as well as what you were talking about in the first question, where there are some things about his mixes that I'm like, man, that string part is too loud and blah, 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 blah. But it just had to get done. And so, and then it was that kind of like, go more analog,
make a decision outside the box.
Yeah, and it was sort of like, well, it's not smooth and perfect, but it's got better sound quality and better converters than I have, and it's finished, so hooray, you know? but it hasn't been mastered yet. I'm trying to find a nice little indie label to put it out, because I don't want to put it out myself if I don't have to, and hopefully they'll pay for the mastering. So if you're out there...
And you like tuna fish sandwiches.
Yeah.
Well, you got to check out her stuff, because it's really good. It's unexpected from I don't know what I was expecting, but when I heard it, it was like, wow, that's unexpected. And it was really, you know, it's really, I would encourage people to visit her website. Especially my favorite part is the, hold on, I got it, that. The Abby Dearest.
Well, I have to keep up on that. I've gotten a few questions, and I have to keep up on that.
I thought that was great. Basically, it's an advice column. Well, with a name like Abby, I guess you have to do that.
I clicked on that too because I was curious.
I know. The funny thing is, those are real questions from people. You know, I mean, like they're like that. This little kid that wrote in, you know, and I've been pretty bad about keeping up on that. I got to a point for a while that it was like, oh, another 13-year-old maudlin goth kid with the same, you know, it's like, and I know that everyone's problems are huge to them and they're important to them, so I don't mean to diminish anyone's love loss in high school.
I just think it was great though, you know, it was just so out there, out of left field, you know, but it made sense with a name like Abby, you know.
Yeah.
So anyhow, if you want to listen to good music and get some advice,
right. I also have a MySpace page and a Facebook page and things like that and stuff.
Your website is cool.
Thank you.
I would stick with that.
Okay.
MySpace.
I gotta update that player because MySpace actually has some newer music on it. Because I know how to update that. Whereas the player on my website, I'm like,
you can talk to
Rob. Why talk to Rob?
You can talk to Rob. Robba.
You're the guy? Okay.
Rob is genius, boy.
Robby Dearest and Dr. Rob.
Dr. Rob.
Actually, I just waved my hand over your microphone. Now check your player. You'll find all the good stuff.
So, Tommy, let's talk about you for a little bit. You've been recording forever. You've had a great studio on your own.
Since Middle Earth, Tommy.
I know you just recently had to sell your board.
Harsh.
But...
May rest in peace.
He showed me some hilarious music videos. I mean, the music videos were so creative. What was that band where you guys were in the suit and you did all the makeup?
Oh, that's Far Flung. That's my most current project. Yeah, we're all very interested in science fiction, and we try to incorporate that into music a lot. And that video was inspired by old Doctor Who episodes I grew up with.
Nice.
Cool. I loved Doctor Who when I was a kid, especially the black and white ones. So,
does your band feature a theremin?
I actually do play mostly Moog, old Moog keyboards in my project. I have a Moog Rogue and an Opus 3, which I use for strings. But I love old analog synths. But it's very interesting. sit and listen to everyone talk here about Pro Tools and stuff, because I have actually only used it as a means of getting sound onto something that makes it easier to edit. I've never used plugins or any of that stuff. I always like she I'm pointing at Abby. Abby is just I think sometimes in awe of the amount of clutter I have. Like today I pulled a bunch of like Aphex compressors and like a bunch of old rack gear, and I still use it. You know, I still use all my rack gear and all my analog modular keyboard stuff. I'm a really big fan of old synthesizers. I also build them and repair them, and to me it's kind of what gives me pleasure. I find it very zen. I don't know how Abby does. Well, I do know how she does. She yells and screams. But to me, I you know, it's you know, it's like pornography. It doesn't look the same on the computer screen. it's like I can't get I've never been able to get used to looking at the wave. So I always have someone come in and edit. I always work with people that actually edit. I still record. If I do stuff myself, I still record on tape or use Day 88 or ADA. I'm not really concerned about. To me, with the music I do, it's pretty experimental or it's very psychedelic.
It's pretty fun. The stuff you played for me, I would say it's fun, quirky stuff.
It's like the background. I that's the only reason I was interested in music, was because I always wanted to twiddle knobs and experiment with stuff, like, you know, and some of it isn't really musical, I guess, you know. I just like making soundtracks for me to pretend I'm floating in space. Most of the
time. That's called sound design.
Are you guys far flung? Are you going to be doing any more recording with them? I mean,
we're actually just started recording an album, we're actually going to be doing it. We have a guy that's suggesting us how to approach this. I think we're going to just click track the drum. We have the songs written. We're just going to like lay down a click track, and the drummer's going to like just do the drums, and then we're just going to sit in the room, plug into our gear, and then write along to the drums. Because our music, it doesn't follow a song structure. We make it up as we go along, and it's like kind of jamming. We do multiple jams on top, and then just take the song might end up being 30 minutes long. Then we just take that 30 minutes and try to squeeze it down to 15 minutes. Well, most the songs are about 15, 20 minutes long, you know. But that's the tradition where I come from. I grew up. I'm a big fan of the German, what they called krautrock music, and a lot of progressive rock. And I actually was a big fan of the band Hawkwind. From the UK, that Lemmy's from Motorhead's first band, and I didn't know later on in my life I'd actually be playing with them. Was my first big touring band was with them, and that's music's always inspired me. Like they called it space rock in England. Technically the first space rock album is probably Piper at the Gates of Dawn. First Pink Floyd album, Interstellar Great Overdrive, Astronomy Down. That's what started the whole space rock movement in the UK. The Hawkwind was a bit more like the Stooges playing it, or MC5 playing, trying to sound like Pink Floyd. And in the tradition of it, I think Far Flung sounds like the Sex. Like I think we're kind of like Punk Floyd, you know. I think we're like a cross between the Sex Pistols and Pink Floyd, maybe, or something, because it's heavy, but it's still very spacey with long instrumental jams. And you know, we do use Mellotrons and Moogs and all sorts of stuff on it, and it's fun. It's a fun project.
Is the Far Flung stuff on YouTube?
Yes, there is a video called "Endless Drifting Wreck." which is not about my truck. It's starting to be that way, though. But it's on YouTube. And this is what we were talking about earlier. We made a very, very strange video, and we thought it was just like a personal thing. Like I bought one of those big paint sprayers, and I got everyone, the band, to spray all our instruments white, and then we got white fencing outfits, and I got white IKEA trash cans, and drilled a hole out, and put a drain stop in it, and we put white around, and then we just all dressed up like white, and it was like Doctor Who, and we used these things called Fisher-Price pixel cameras, which were like these things kids had, and it records video onto a cassette, and it looks like old Cinescope from the 50s, and we filmed it with that, and we put it up, and then all of a sudden, you know, people were just like, oh my God, like, people in the band was like, have you seen how many hits we have on this? And then we looked, and it's kind of like, compared to like record sales we've had, it's astronomical how many people have looked at the video. And I think it's because people have just said, you have to check this video. It's weird. But because of the video, people are listening to the song, and they're liking the song. But it's the biggest amount of exposure that band Far Flung has ever gotten is just because of the YouTube video. And, you know, it cost us $600 to make that video, so it was a good investment, I think.
It's a fun video, though. I mean, I really would encourage people to go and take a look at it.
It's a long video. It's like,
it's maximum 10 minutes on YouTube.
Well, it's 6 minutes, 43 seconds. I'm looking at it right now.
It's pretty condensed, you know.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, one thing I noticed, too, is when you watch the video and you hear the music, there's a certain I don't know, honesty about it. I mean, it's you guys actually doing what you want to do the way you want to do it, as opposed to being, you know, there's no predefined loops. There's none of that kind of stuff in it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I really liked it. For some reason, I really, it just shows really good creativity, especially knowing what a budget, you know, what kind of budget.
I did one commercial record, and it was on a, Nona Hendrix's label, Rhythm Bank, and it started doing good, and then I had a major meltdown because they said, we want you, it's like a kind of a sort of electronica record, like a down-tempo record, and then they asked us, I was actually talking to Abby about this last night, they asked us if we could do it unplugged. I go like, where's electronica band? she wanted us to play acoustic guitar.
You should have just done like silent mime or silence. Like,
yeah. We had not a hit record, but we had a record that was getting big play. One song that was getting a lot of play by, and it was used in the Queer Eye for the Straight Eye. What's it called? Straight Eye for the Queers guy. Or whatever. It was used in their theme and stuff.
That's
and
you
I'm
sorry.
And, you know, and she wanted us to do this this unplugged thing. And then I don't want to do this. And I was being forced to do it. And then I just had a meltdown about it. And I couldn't deal with it, so...
Well, you should have gone up to her and go, okay, here it is unplugged.
Right, and then, like, just silent.
That would be great if he did an unplugged session. Yeah, just noise of the scratching.
You get bicycles that do electricity. Yeah. You can be playing electronica and unplugged in.
That would have been great.
You could do pitch changes by having speed.
Or just
slow down.
Those octagon organs. Never mind.
Yeah. That was the only one time that I've only ever done music that I totally enjoy doing. If I'm not having fun doing it, I really don't want to do it. And I've just been very lucky that people have listened to it and bought the records and like it. I've just been very, very lucky that way. Like I played the Fillmore 2 weeks ago, this band MGMT, because they said they listened to a band that I was involved with. And they just asked us to play the Greek Theater here.
Wow.
And,
wow.
But we
not
sound
far, not far flung.
It's, oh, this
you
is
should
Chrome.
Just clarify because I think it's a little confusing.
A project called Chrome, which is an old art punk band that I've played and recorded with. And it's amazing because we sound nothing like them. I mean, it's like kind of industrial punk, weird experimental music, but they asked us to play, and they must have I have no idea why. I mean, the audience when we play, the audience just stands and looks at us like on blinking, and go, "What the hell is this?" And like, you know, and who are these old men with bowler hats on? You know, but anyway, you just but the main what I'm trying to get at is like you never know who. Has had an influence, right. Or who's been listening to you? Yeah, you can things like that can just turn around, and you know,
well,
when you're old.
I will say though, you know, from what we were talking about in the first part of the podcast, and it's great to see artists like you guys who, you know, you record, you play your instruments, and you really have a passion for your music. And thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. You know, we're going to be wrapping things up because, wow, time really flew by.
Oh,
so guess what?
Mike.
We're not going to be able to talk about expensive microphones this time.
Aww.
We'll have to wait till next time. But I will tell you, the reason why I brought that up is because I have an opportunity to buy a Sony... What's it, 800G?
C800G?
Yeah, C800G.
That's a nice microphone.
The tube one?
Uh-huh.
For $3,000.
Wow.
What?
That's a $9,000 microphone.
I know!
Well, it started as a $5,000 microphone, and then people started being willing to spend too much for them, but three is a deal.
So and I wanted to...
And how many can you get?
I can get one, and uh-huh. The reason why I brought it up, because I was thinking... You know, what does that kind of money buy you in a mic? And so we were going to talk about that. But we'll do that next time.
Let's do that next time because we have a lot of C800G stories. We do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Oh, great. So we'll look forward
don't
to
you
that.
Have one?
We'll talk about it next time. I've got to leave it wanting more.
So thank you, Abby.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tommy.
You're
nice
welcome.
To meet all you
that
guys.
Was fun.
Thank you.
Really quick before we go, Rob, okay, you know what? I'm going to interrupt myself right now.
Wow.
I'm just going to say I'm working for the first time with Rob on a project, and Rob is truly just a brainiac, okay? That's all I'm going to say. We're working on this little web thing, and when it comes out, you know, I got to give him kudos there right now because it's pretty amazing some of the stuff you're
but
doing.
But we can't
Rob.
Talk about it yet.
We won't.
That's another good tease.
That is a great tease. But I was just amazed at your knowledge.
I'm glad I could dazzle you.
Well, you know what? You talk about it, but you walk the walk, too.
Let's see if that ever gets finished, that project.
Anyhow, so Rob, what are you up to?
What am I up to? A few things. We just actually did the music, or part of the music, for the USA Pavilion, which is in Shanghai, China, and Sound Deluxe. I guess, which part of Sound Deluxe, Scott?
My group.
DMG?
DMG. Design Music Group, yeah.
Design Music Group. They did a lot of the other sound for the project.
And mixing.
It was a gigantic project, and I'm not actually
sure. We flew to China.
Yeah, and spent weeks there.
The Pavilion, yeah.
But so we did some music for that, and that was a really fun project. And apparently, they're getting... like 20,000 people a day through this exhibit now, and it's only been open for
it's
like
the
a
World's
week
Fair.
And,
yeah, and it's
wow.
The American
it's
Pavilion.
One of the most,
it's the American Pavilion yeah. At the World's Fair.
And they told me one day they had 30,000 people come through this thing.
Holy
wow. We saw an aerial shot of it. It's a city.
Yeah.
What else?
Yeah.
Literally,
yeah.
It's a city.
Wow. I saw pictures of the pavilions there. They're yeah. Beautiful.
Wow.
It seemed pretty incredible. We didn't get to go to China, but we were still working on the music. While they were in China, it was kind of a last minute
we couldn't
thing.
Get our guys out of China.
Yeah, there was that story, too.
Yeah.
But so that was one thing we did. We did a few minutes of music for that, and that was a lot of fun. The City Love website, the songwriting contest, is heating up. I think we're up to 138 submissions as
wow.
Of today, something
that's
like
cool.
That. And producing another record that I can't talk about. Working with
I can't talk about it.
The artist who everybody knows I work with, who I can't talk about yet. I guess that's just about it. A lot of stuff going on. And that web project that I'm doing with you is going to be very cool. People don't realize Mike is also like this video whiz guy.
We
He's
know.
Not just an audio
we know.
Guy. Everybody has their secret lives.
Wow.
I just want to hug Rob right now.
There's no hugging in audio.
I mean, that's a t-shirt.
Hugging in audio. That's a good slogan. Abby, anything you want to plug? You want to tell people about your website, your next album, tour? I mean, you pretty much told us anything. But why don't you give us your website one more time?
It's www.abbytravis.com. There's no E in Abby. It's A-B-B-Y. T-R-A-V-I-S. And there's stuff on YouTube and blah, blah, blah. Oh, and I'm playing. Is this live? Is this going on the air live, what we're doing right now?
This will be on the air in about a week and a half.
Kind of live.
So
tell us what you would have done.
On a Saturday night. Well, because I have some gigs coming up.
State them, and if they haven't come up.
I've got some shows coming up. Look at the website. Just go to the website. You're fabulous.
Tommy, what about you? You're going to be doing the Greek?
I think that was the 17th of July with this MGM project, but that's with the band Chrome.
Nice.
I play with. And then I have the Far Flung project. I don't know yet because we're just starting to record.
Oh, I do have one thing to plug.
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
Steal my thunder.
No, I just meant after your thing. I'm sorry. Right.
No, go ahead.
No, I feel bad.
No, I don't want to get...
Wow, this is rich.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Abby.
So anyways, there is... I just did a track that came out on this Velvet Underground tribute album. I did a cover of the song New Age.
Oh, okay.
And I really like the way it came out. So
cool.
Check that out. And it's on iTunes and Amazon and all
that
stuff.
It's out already?
Yeah, it just came out about a week and a half ago.
What's the name of the album?
American Velvet.
Okay.
And there's other... Like Jane Wheatlin from the Go-Go's has a track on there. And... the guy that produced R.E.M., Mitch Easter, he did this totally awesome version of Black Angel's Death Song. So just, anyways, check it out.
Cool.
Right. Back to you, Tommy.
You can go to my website, abbytravis.com. That's A-B-B-Y, no E, no E. No, just check out the Far Flung stuff. There's a lot of live stuff on YouTube. And my other band is called Anubian Lights, and then there's Chrome, and then there's Hawkwind, and Damo Suzuki Band.
You're in Anubian Lights. That's cool. I know those guys.
Oh, yeah, that is my band.
I had no idea.
Oh.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's how I met Ali.
That's true.
Yeah.
Do any of these bands have their own website, or is it all through YouTube?
I don't think we paid the GoDaddy thing. I think they're gone. Last time I looked, Far Flung was... I'm not kidding you. Last time I looked, Far Flung was a car insurance company, and Nubian Alliance is a belly dancing store or something.
Yes.
But honestly, we just let it go because... most of the traffic's on YouTube and Facebook and MySpace now. So we're just like, God, no one is even going to the website, you know. And, you know, just people just email us there and, you know, a record company's meant to tell us when stuff sells checks. Well, they don't, but, you know. So anyways, there's a lot of stuff up in YouTube and stuff like that.
So head to YouTube.
Brandy, what about you?
What is going on? Not a ton at work. A lot of romantic comedies coming through. So waiting for some...
Like in the work, where you work, or...?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ba-dum-bunk. I was like such a... Okay, I'm
going
off
So
now.
waiting for some action or whatnot to come in, and working at home, working on a new sort of ambient electronic album.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Diego, what about you? Any more plants, or are you done with the plant genre?
Plant? What did you say?
He records trees.
Yes.
He's
good.
No,
besides other insane things.
Yeah, hydrocolonic closets.
Did you say hydrocolonic?
No. What do you call that?
So I'm working on a project. I can't say anything about it, but I can say the name, actually. I can't say what it is, but I'm having a lot of fun. I'm playing the Xperi bass,
wow,
percussions, and many other things.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Just did a huge session. I brought a lot of different instruments and everything. Beautiful recording location. I wish I could say something, because, but I can't. And it's a work in progress. I'll let you know something whenever possible.
Okay.
Do you know when it'll be done, or when you're aiming for it?
I can't say anything.
Wow.
Sorry, but it's a lot of fun, a lot of playing, a lot of recording. So I got to do the things that I like. So it's recording in a creative way, playing my instruments and everything.
Ozamatli. I just said it. I'm joking. I don't know. It could be them. I don't know.
Well, that's great, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. I can't really say anything about it. I wish I could.
But you know what?
But it's,
I can just see you and Rob getting together and not talking. I can't tell you.
There are six things we can't talk about.
I go to a convention that's like, what are you working on? Yeah, yeah. You just don't ask the question anymore.
Scott, how about you?
What am I doing?
What's your latest movie?
What's your latest movie? I am Death and Life of Charlie St. Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to come out October 15th. We just found out it's coming out July 30th. So we are doing reshoots, and we're heading to the mixing stage pretty pronto. We're going to pretty much camp out there until the beginning of July. Then we zip it off to the developers, and off to the theaters it goes for the summer release.
Wow.
It's actually a good film. It's Zac Efron, but it's a drama. And it's tested very well, and they want to get it out to the audiences for summer, and I think that they're getting pretty excited about it. We scored very, very well. So we've got that going on. I've got two other projects. One of them, I'm doing this really cool old-style Disney. I can't go much into it, but I can. It's kind of fun. It's very old with Disney from the days of Fantasia. And, yeah, it's been...
are they doing Fantasia in 3D?
No, God, no. And it's something new. It's something original, but it's got the look and characters. And anyway, it's kind of neat. I just got finished mixing that, and we're going to go more with it. But it's pretty spectacular. And another project is, we were talking about a little bit at dinner. I like the concept. Occasionally I have this one client that will give us a visual and say, think outside the box and come up with whatever you want. Music, design, whatever. And it's a sounding board for inspiration. So it's not the final project. It's what could be done. So it's totally experimental. And they want to know, you know, give me something that we'd expect to hear. Give us something we'd expect not to hear. And just play with it. And so I've got myself and a couple guys, and we're just going to noodle for 2 weeks and just see what our imaginations can come up with for Sonic. And I guess I can't go too much into it, but it's difficult.
Big secret.
You know, it's
big secret.
But it's neat. You know, it's a lot of times, you know, in working in the commercial medium, you're forced to go down a very predictable path. And what's nice is this one is, okay, you can do that, but think outside the box.
That's great, yeah.
And so then you just sit there and you go, I could grab a bunch of people breathing. I could do...
maybe trees.
Trees, absolutely.
Diego about some-
so we're thinking about, we're grabbing audio gear, synths, recorders, and just going to go to town with it for 2 weeks.
Great.
Next week on Project X. Yes. More things we can't tell you about. Project
X. It's the kind of mission that I like. You know?
Okay, so really quick, let me wrap this all up. We can't talk about it.
I can talk about it a little.
I said something, too. I said the experience.
Yes.
Yeah, he said something.
Come on.
What are you up to, Mike, that you can talk about?
Let's see. I will talk about...
Come on.
I'm working on a project with Rob.
There's that.
That'll be coming out.
Is that about?
I did some commercials for a electronic chain in Texas. So those should be airing, I think, starting next week. And just finished a Nickelodeon show, another one. And that'll be airing on the 22nd. And
That's about it, really. That's
well, you know what? I have to give one little shout out.
Absolutely.
And by the time this is posted, it will have already passed. But Mr. Wonder has a big birthday coming up.
106.
No, not that big. No, Stevie has a big milestone birthday coming up on Thursday.
Oh.
So I never know if he's listening or not, but wishing him a happy birthday.
To Stevie Wonder?
Huh? Yeah.
Oh, happy birthday, Stevie Wonder.
And it's also, thank you. It's also Peter Gabriel's birthday, which is weird. They're born the same day.
Wow. Ooh.
Which is pretty strange.
Is he English?
Which one?
One of the two. Oh, I'm not so keen on the English.
It is a big milestone birthday for Stevie, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday,
Stevie.
Happy birthday, Stevie, and you can come join us. And
Anytime.
We'll have cake.
All right, well, hey,
trust me, that works.
Listen, if you have a comment or question for anybody on the panel, you can write us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also visit our Facebook page and our MySpace page. But you know what? Come on. In reality, MySpace is kind of... Yeah, Facebook.
And remember, that's Audio Nowcast with no E, like Abby.
And I want to give a shout out to.
That's true.
I got a really good email from one of our.
I would.
I want to give a shout out to one of our listeners who sent us a really nice email, Warren Christensen from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I'll have to let you guys read it, but he said a lot of really nice things. So thank you, Warren.
All right, Warren.
That and the fact that he picked up. A copy of Potato Salad, Studio Voodoo, and Martin Page's albums.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Because he was listening to our – he caught up on all our podcasts.
Well, tell him to get all of Abby's stuff now, too.
That's right.
He's a real friend of the podcast. Show us what kind of friend you are there.
But thanks a lot, Warren, for the kind words. All right. For myself and all the guys here who can't talk about it, thanks for listening. And thank you, Abby, and thank you, Tommy, for joining
You're
us.
You're welcome.
And we'll catch you next time. Take it easy.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.